Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In my 27 years as a Victorian policewoman, I investigated everything from a stolen bicycle to a stolen life. Policing taught me a lot about human nature, which I explore in my podcasts with a variety of fascinating guests discussing the human side and impact of crime, not only on their lives, but mine as well. My podcasts are not suitable for children and some adults for that matter. If you find yourself affected by my subject matter, please contact Lifeline or any other support service or person that you feel comfortable with. My guests provide their recollection of an event or incident, sharing their thoughts and their emotions, but it's theirs and not everyone will agree with them. I understand that and I hope you do too. Thank you.
Those are least of your worries, you know. You're in a survival mode. You're just trying to stay alive there and then, and you're thinking of present and how can I survive this hour or this minute.
Hello, everyone. Just a bit of a heads up. The next couple of weeks won't be easy listening for many or most of you. I interview a woman who was raped, abducted, tortured and locked in a cupboard. We've left out a few pieces of information which I just felt was too graphic to share. And the usual warnings apply. Okay, thanks. Gloria Anderson has to be the most forgiving person on this earth. Her faith in God is incredibly strong, and I believe it's the reason that she possesses such forgiveness. Not only is she forgiving, but she's courageous and brave as well, amazingly so. Gloria has got every reason in the world to think that the world was or is a very dark, cruel place to belong. But it's just not in her nature to think like that. Gloria worked in a soup kitchen, helping those less fortunate who couldn't afford life's basics like, say, food, shelter and safety. Gloria's faith drove her to provide what she could to these people, many of whom were lost and lonely. And, you know, no, just speaking to Gloria, she would have been such a shining light to those who came into that soup kitchen. Gloria saw the goodness in many, including Darren, a regular client who'd lost his job, his home, and his self-worth. And look, he was a bit of a rough diamond. Gloria was finding it hard to make ends meet and to help with the bills. And she had boarders to do this, but Darren took the place of a boarder who'd left. And for the first couple of months, it actually seemed to be working out really well for both of them. But things began to change when Darren wanted to be more than a boarder to Gloria. He wanted a relationship, which Gloria didn't. And she made that plainly clear. But Darren didn't take that news too well, and feeling rejected and angry, he bound and raped her. He tortured her, then abducted her, putting her bound and gagged into the boot of her own car, and he drove it to a New South Wales motel, where he again raped and tortured her and locked her in a cupboard. Somehow, Gloria managed to escape and alert the owners of the motel. But it's there that Gloria's nightmare really began. Because of laws which wouldn't allow Gloria to give her evidence once and once only to a court, Gloria had to give evidence at trial in two separate states for the offences committed in that state only, as the respective laws wouldn't allow her to give her evidence just the once. It just seemed and seems to be all about fairness to the accused, with, I've got to say, almost total disregard to the victim. In saying that, I'm actually not sure how you would fix that, because different states have different laws, different police rules and regulations. But surely there must be some way that Gloria could have been saved the trauma of giving her evidence again and again. And on top of all this, Gloria's faith has somehow managed to allow her to forgive Darren and even feel a little bit sorry for him. Oh, Gloria, that introduction, boy. But thank you for joining us today on NFI. And I believe we have another guest with us, have we?
Yes, thank you for having me, Narelle. Yes, I have my cat sitting next to me. So if you hear any meowing or rustling, it'll be the cat probably walking across my laptop.
well, we'll deal with that as it happens. Let's just wing it and see how we go. But, yes, thank you so much, Gloria. This is really quite a difficult conversation to have from my point of view, just because I cannot imagine what you have gone through. But you are very strong, and you want others to hear your story, but we want to try and do everything we can to alert people to some of the inadequacies in our laws, and the only way we can do that is to do something like this. So to start the questions, Gloria, I think I know the answer to this question, but in the hour or so that I've spoken to you prior to today, despite all the trauma that you've experienced, you still see the good in everyone. And you've got such, and people will hear this as we go on, but you've got such a bright, effervescent personality. How do you do that, Gloria?
I believe a lot to do with my upbringing, I would say, and also my faith are the main things that drive everything I do, including the work I do, or even seeing the good in people. Being a Christian, going to church, I strongly believe in practicing what you preach, or... Mm-hmm. I know I'm not a perfect person. I have plenty of flaws. I'm not perfect. You know, nobody's perfect, but we, I'll say, strive to do the best with what we have, strive to do the best of what I learn as well as a Christian. So I think, and try to practice that and to give that. So, yeah, that's the best way I can answer that.
Yeah, it's I don't have a faith like that, Gloria. It's funny, and I know you'd probably have an explanation for this, but with what I saw, I've never been a particularly religious person.
Yeah.
But what I saw within policing, I just saw such cruelty, I just saw some terrible things. And I do think if there was a God, why would he or she allow such terrible things to happen to people? And like what we're going to speak about today, it doesn't get any worse than that, Gloria. So I just can't imagine, I can't imagine how you could continue to have such faith with what's happened, because you could have just fallen over and said, what sort of a God is this that allows this?
Yeah.
But I really admire you, Gloria, because most people wouldn't be that understanding and forgiving.
I believe there is free will, right? We all have a choice to make. We choose to do good or bad. And I believe as a Christian, like, we were given free will to choose good or bad. And if somebody chooses to do bad, that does not mean there's no God. That's their choice. They have made that and they have to live with that consequences, you know? It's like driving through a red light. You have to pay the bill, right? You have to pay the fine. You have done the deed. You have to pay for it. I believe it's the same. I'm trying to explain it in a very simplistic way. So I believe it's the same way in a human sort of form, but it just happens that when we do stuff, it's a lot more hurtful and a lot more harmful, and it can appear so gruesome and cruel and, you know, nasty. And I probably think it's a very simplistic form of explaining this, but that's how I see it. And if I find it easier in some ways to handle it and go, well, like, for example, Darren did what he did, and he's accountable to that, to God. I'm not accountable for his deeds. I'm accountable for my action and reaction to what he's done, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, it does, Gloria. And like I said, I really admire the way that you see the world, because, as I said, I don't think many could see it like that. But, look, can we talk a little bit about Darren? Can you tell us about the soup kitchen and how you came to meet him?
Yes, definitely. Darren, he was referred to our center by the Centrelink. We were not that far away from the office, and came for a food parcel, and he sort of, you know, hung around for a meal, and he quite liked the atmosphere. So he came to volunteer. He asked if he could volunteer, saying he had a bit of a security background. He'd done a bit of security work in Sydney, and we always have issues, you know, people coming in drunk, all sorts of, you know, things at the center, because it's an open house for everybody. And our coordinator at that time said, yes, definitely, he's most welcome, and you can, you know, hang around. So soon became part of our volunteer group. And sort of, you know, accepted and loved by everybody. He was not treated any different than any other volunteer that was there. So, yeah, that was my introduction to Darren.
And so with your introduction to Darren and you meeting him, let's say initially, what was his personality like?
I often said he was a bit like a big teddy bear sort of a personality, you know, friendly, always cracking jokes, so always having a good laugh, helpful, and, yeah, so that was the initial first impression. So, I was cautious, cautious with, as a girl, I guess everybody's a bit cautious with, you know, guys around, especially in a place like our center. That's about it. That was my first impression of Darren.
Okay. And so can you explain what the first few months were like when Darren moved into your home to help with the bills? As we said before, you had boarders quite a bit to help with the bills, and Darren just replaced another boarder that left. Yeah. So can you tell us about those first initial months and when did it start to change?
Definitely. He was very good. There was when he moved in, there was another boarder as well. So I had two guys staying. I had a sort of a granny flat at the back. So one boarder was staying there, and there was another spare room in the house. And Darren initially was staying there. So it was fairly friendly. He worked not that far. He found a job not that far from my kids' school, so occasionally he would even walk the kids to school on his way to work. You know, it was around the same time. Became part of the family, so to speak, along with, you know, the other person who was staying with us. And I think about, I'm trying to think, about 5-6 months into it, he started pushing boundaries, and then, you know, it started off with crude jokes, and then it sort of went on, it just sort of, you know, I'm trying to find an exact way to explain it. It just, it's sort of, you know, friends, but then even, you know, this accidental brush, you know, with hands here, you know, just,
yep.
That sort of, it just is sort of, oh, you know, oops, this happened, or I touched you the wrong way, or, you know, just grooming is probably the right word.
Yes, that was the word I was going to use. It sounds like, you know, that happens when people meet people that they like.
Yeah.
I understand Darren obviously liked you, but he was, as you say, pushing those boundaries.
Yeah.
But you made it very, very clear that it wasn't on your horizon. But before we go any further, Gloria, just before you tell us, and in as much detail or as little detail as you feel comfortable about what happened when you rejected his advances, I know you wanted me to explain to the listeners that you will more than likely sound quite robotic dealing with what has occurred. But because you've given this evidence many times, you've been cross-examined, you have, as I said, given this so many times, it's almost like I suppose you're reading from a book, and you may appear to sound unaffected or unemotional, but you want it to assure everybody, and I do too, that that is far from the truth. The truth is that if you let yourself go and not put up this brave facade, you actually couldn't tell your story because you would get too emotional. So I'm sure the listeners will appreciate whatever you can tell us, and understand how you come across may not actually be how you feel. So I just wanted to put that in there before you continued.
Thank you.
So can we go back to he was making moves that you were rejecting?
Yeah. So he, and also he was, I also noticed he had started scaring off people around me, and so sort of isolating me as well from friends, and also potential boarders as well. I remember there was another lady who sort of came to see the room, and he sort of, you know, basically I believe he scared her off. Again, that whole grooming thing, and he was isolating me. And he did assault me prior, but, you know, we women sometimes don't sort of react, or, you know, just, I guess, due to circumstances, I just ignored the situation, should I say. And also because I was just, I had just separated from my husband. So I was dealing with the divorce and separation and trying to be a single mom, and then having Darren be Darren and, you know, and make his moves and different things. And so I guess that was least of my worries, so to speak, even though it was big in hindsight, if I look at it now. But I think, yeah, so that was sort of a bit hard, and I try to brush it off very sort of calmly initially, but just really gently, like, you know, just laugh it off, or just not encourage it in some ways, should I say, or not say anything beyond what, you know, if he said something crude, I would just like, ha ha ha, and just leave it at that, and not, you know, not feed it, so to speak. And from there, the rejection, I think, so after my birthday, I think that was the massive, it cannot happen. We are two very different people, you know. He was not religious, or, you know, I was like, it can't work. I'm fairly religious. I go to church, and our values are different. You know, just I couldn't see it working. So I had just put my foot down. I was like, that's it. And he calmed down, and he sort of seemed to back off, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was around my birthday. And then 3 months later, and just we went for a party or something. And we came back, and he just snapped. Literally just snapped. And sort of he made his initial move. And I was like exhausted because I was cooking all day. I was tired. So he was like, "Oh, just, you know, rub your shoulders." I'm like, "Yeah, whatever." And then like, "Oh, your feet is, yeah, just put your feet up," and, you know, sort of working his way up, so to speak. And he snapped. I refused the initial, I was like, I literally, my words were, "Darren, the 100th time, you know, I can't do this, it's enough." And he just snapped out of there, and then he punched me and slapped me, and then the whole drama started. So, yeah, that was the initial, I guess, progress from being a boarder to, you know, leading into the incident. So,
when you say that he punched you, whereabouts did he punch you, and did it cause bruising, or like, was it a slap or a punch? Can you explain that a bit to us?
Yeah, he sort of dragged me to my bedroom, and he punched me on my stomach. So like, that was like, I've never been punched in the stomach. So like, and this was my first sort of punch in the stomach. Yes. And then he, I won't remember the exact, you know, it's been a while. chronicle, you know.
Yeah. Order of it's things. All right. It's all right, Gloria. You're not giving evidence in court now. Well, feel free to, and we don't know, so you just tell us what you feel like.
For me, it bothers me. I'm sort of, you know, like, how did this happen first? Well, that happened before.
Yeah, no, that's okay. You just tell it how you remember it. That's okay.
And, just from there, he tied me up. I think so he tied my hand up or something, and then, yeah, he tried to put something in my tried to feed me something, or, you know, it was some sort of drink or something, and he said it was vodka, yep. And it wasn't vodka, then he freaked out, and then he untied me, and then so that was just all very sort of, I was in shock because I was like, what happened? It just literally flipped within, you know, seconds, so to speak. I was just getting over that shock, and then he went away. I guess I could have done, people say, like, why didn't you react then, or could have gone to the police? I guess I was just shocked. I was like, what's happened? Just making sense of it, I guess, in all of it. Yep. And the next day, next day things just got worse. First, initially, he said, will you go to the police? I was like, I don't know. I'm still processing this. And then he said, I'll hand myself in. I'm like, if you want to, go for it. And I think he freaked out, I guess, realizing what will that mean, you know, if he did surrender himself. And then next day, he made me a coffee. That was just a bit weird. And then he asked me, we were sitting outside, and he asked me, he's like, do you still want me to go to the police? I said, I would prefer so, yes. And then he just, that's when the whole literal nightmare sort of began. And from there, he, that was like, okay, I know how this is going to work. So, and he dragged me back to the bedroom, tied me up. That's where the torture started. Torture, not by words, like physical torture. So he pierced my nipples with sewing needles. He used it like a tap, the needles. They were twisted. My breasts were all, at the end of 2-3 days, it was all black, blue, and all colors of the rainbow, possibly, I think. And he used that as a tool, pretty much, to torture, to get anything out of me, or, you know, to respond or make me do things. So that was his thing to do. And then he decided he took pictures of me naked. He raped me, and it just, and then in, because now he was freaking out, so then it just it continued back and forth from his room to my bedroom. He was just and he had, you know, he had pillowcase over my head, so I guess, you know, disconnecting the person, you know, as they say in psychology. Yeah. So, you know, you're disconnecting. Yes. So that you don't have to see the person suffering. And so that happened, and I don't know what not he put inside my body. And at one point he even injected methylated spirit, which I found out later on. He said it was something else, but, you know, the police evidence and different things, they found out it was something else. Found out it was methylated spirit. That burned like hell. It was horrible.
I think I know where you mean, but can we just, do you mean that he put that in your vagina?
Yes, he did, yes.
Oh, my goodness, Gloria.
It was gruesome. And obviously, like I said, he took pictures of me and all sorts of stuff. And then he was trying to get details of my bank account because he didn't have any money. So he was trying to get, you know, bank account details again. He same using the torture method to do so. In this meantime, he discovered I had texted my counselor that, you know, I was possibly raped, attacked, assaulted, should I say. And so he saw the text message on the phone, freaked out again, you know, the torture started, everything possible. I was whipped with a wire hanger, I think. Skin at my back was just ripped. The worst one, I think. I mean, yes, it's all, everything was bad. You can't really grade, you know, which torture was better than the other. It's just one of those. It's like, how do you grade it? Everything was bad.
That must be a very, very troubled man, Gloria. Like, this is just out, as I said, this is out of, you know, a horror movie.
Yeah, it was,
and I'm sorry. It's
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
your life, you know?
He was trying to dehumanize me. That's what it is. And, you know, more he could do things to break me, so to speak. And, you know, more, I don't know what he was trying to achieve. But, I mean, I do know it's control. So, you know, didn't handle the rejection. And another one he used was my kids to threaten, you know, to make me do stuff. So if you don't do this, then I will harm the kids and, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, sort of just, so that was all literally all in one day. And then he decided he was going to escape. And his initial escape plan was to go to, he was going to drive to Queensland and get on a boat and escape or something. Mm-hmm. And I was going to come along with him, and he was going to leave me at the border of Victoria and New South Wales, and I'll make my way back home, whatever that meant. And he was absolutely paranoid of getting caught, so he was just constantly checking his phone and avoiding, you know, highways, freeways. So he just went all through the back routes, dirt route, you know.
And where were you? Where were you?
He would pull me in and out of the car boot. So initially I was in the front seat, and then he drove to a factory area. Then he put me in the boot, and then, you know, so he would just do this back and forth. And assault me along the way as well. And until we reached what do you call Young, and there, but even before we reached Young, when we were at the border, I remember seeing, you know, I was trying to memorize the places whenever I was out of the boot, trying to memorize where we were going, and when we were reached the border, I asked, we are at the border, are you going to drop me sometime, you know, here or where, close by? And it was not responsive, so to speak. He stayed quiet. And he just didn't. So I believe he wasn't going to, and then that's when I really freaked out, because, you know, the plan he had mentioned, it was going beyond the plan now. And that's when I started really freaking out. I was like, okay, I am going to die. And I had to come to terms with that. And I had accepted my fate that I was going to die. And I was okay with that. It was like, I couldn't do much, right? When you're gonna die, you're gonna die. I could cry about it, but at that moment, I guess, yeah, I had come to that moment and just I prayed, and I, you know, there's so many Christian stories of missionaries when they were getting tortured and persecuted, and, you know, they would sing songs. I was singing all the old hymns I could remember, you know, the Amazing Grace and all sorts of things, and to sort of come to peace with my fate, so to speak. And I had accepted that. And then eventually when we did arrive in Young, initially the hotel, we had arrived fairly early. So the hotel was, the motel, should I say, was closed. So we drove off and we parked somewhere in the orchard, and there, we stayed there for a while. Again, the torture and assault was happening all through this time as well. And while we were there, actually, at the orchard, I had a moment with him. I guess we were killing time. I looked straight in his eyes and I said, I forgive you. He didn't really like that. So his reaction was, well, more torture. So off he went, twisting manacles.
Gloria, were you on the travel between Melbourne and Yarm?
Yeah.
For two questions, were you clothed?
I was. He picked up a pair of tracky pants and then just a sweatshirt. So there was like no underwear or nothing. So I was just wearing that, no shoes. I remember, at point, I don't know where he pulled me out. I remember walking on snow, on, literally ice with no shoes on. That was a bit cold. So all this was happening. And there were places where even while I was getting questioned, they asked, like, couldn't you escape? It's like, escape and go where? And the other fear was that because he had said that he had sent pictures of my kids to somebody, and if I did something wrong, that, my kids would possibly get harmed. So the fear of trying to keep my kids safe, so you don't react, right? So,
of course. But also, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were at times, a lot of times, bound and gagged, and you had a pillow over your head, didn't you?
No, I didn't have it on me, but it was just, because while not in the car, he was just weird. He will go through moments. He will pull me out, somewhere, tie me up, put me back. And then once, I guess he kind of, towards the end, he relaxed. And so he stopped tying me. But so he would just go through these weird phases, I guess, with his paranoia or whatever, what was going through his head.
See, that is not a question. You just said that people said, couldn't you escape? That is not a question that I would ask myself, because I think, of course, you are going to escape if you can. But and it's almost like it's putting the blame on you because you didn't escape. But the why you didn't escape, obviously, is because of those threats and the fact that he had these photos and he had said he was going to harm your children. After Darren has done this to you, absolutely.
And you expect the worst. This
man means business. Like, this is the real deal. He is not mucking around. So I don't like the fact that somebody has actually said, well, and I think maybe if I wasn't a policewoman, I think people might think that, like, why didn't you escape?
I've heard all sorts of questions and reasons,
I bet you have.
Should have, could have, would have done, but it's like, when things are happening, should have, could have, would have doesn't come to your mind. Those are least of your worries, you're in a survival mode. You're just trying to stay alive there and then, and you're thinking of present and how can I survive this this hour and or so, this minute.
Oh, yeah, literally, you're right. Yeah. Minute by minute, you are just surviving. And so you get to the after the orchard.
Yeah.
You get to the motel.
Yeah.
What happens in the motel?
At the motel, he told me that he was going. He told the motel that apparently he had a sick mother or something. And then he told me a different story, and then at the motel he told a different story that, but he did say there was a second person with him. And obviously from the orchard, he had put me in front of the car because, you can't pull a person out of the boot in front of the
Sorry, Gloria, but you're right.
She's like, it's not going to work, right?
Oh, I just forgot this woman in the boot. Yeah. Don't ask any questions. Bloody hell. Yeah, go on. Yeah.
So, sorry, I'm laughing, but it's like, if I don't laugh, I'll cry.
I feel a bit the same, but it's like, seriously, that's right, like bringing somebody out of the boot. Oh, my goodness.
So,
but go on.
Anyway, yeah. So he puts me in front, drives me to the motel, and this room was literally parked. We parked right in front of the room, so it was straight, you know, from the car straight to the room. And I guess he was tired because we had been driving all night. So because I think we had arrived initially at Young around 4 a.m.
Right, that early.
Yeah, okay. And so by the time we, you know, checked in, it was about, I don't know, 7 or something. So we were, you know, killing time in the meantime. And then he, initially he, I think we were just, I guess we were just tired, so we just slept. And before we slept again, he had tied me up, you know, so I wouldn't run. And even when he would tie, like if he was sleeping, he tied my hands and then he tied another, I don't know, his shirt or something to that, and then he was holding it so I don't escape.
Yeah.
Okay. So he like tucked it under his, you know, arm so I wouldn't run. So he helped, sort of, he was holding me. So I don't know how I slept. You just do, I guess he was just sitting in the room.
Be exhausted.
Yeah, drained mentally.
Yeah.
And he did wake up sometime during the day, he got food from somewhere while I was in the boot before we went in. So he had all this food and from Mathis or somewhere. He goes like, go have some food. I don't know what I don't think I couldn't even eat. And there again, I was assaulted, you know, that whole torture thing again. That it was literally like clockwork. He would do these certain things. You would go in a pattern, if that makes sense. You know, he would do this, he would do this, and then, ta-da, you know. So he would like, I could tell what was coming. And and then towards the end, he asked me to take the needles out from my, from my nipples, which he had pierced. So by this time, I guess my breasts were infected. I'm pretty sure.
Hey, Gloria, are you saying that the needles were through your nipples this whole time?
Yeah. And he used that. He used that to torture me. So that was his, you know, he would twist that to, and then, he asked me to take the needles out, and I think I had a shower, I'm in this survival mode as well, you know, I'm trying to leave traces behind as well, all along the way. I was like, what I can leave behind. I remember we had stopped at once. We had stopped at one place. I had the divorce paper in the car, and I was like, shit, if he finds the address, excuse my French, finds the kid's address, you know, he can send this person to this place, because I knew he didn't know the place. So I managed to slip out this envelope out of the car, and the police found it later on. They didn't find the divorce papers, but they found the envelope, and it had my ex's name written on it. So, like, they found it. I was like, yes! I don't know who has my divorce paper, but somebody has my divorce paper somewhere in Victoria.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they're going to do with it, but sure. It was like, you know, the breadcrumbs, sort of, you know, leaving the trail behind. And then, as even the needles he asked me to throw, I, you know, wrapped it in a tissue. So I kept, rather than chucking out, I sort of kept it in a you know, threw it in the bin, but it was like strategically placed, if that makes sense. So just in case somebody finds it. And then he tied me up again. But, you know, my arms were so sore because he would tie my hands at the back of me. So, like, my shoulders were like, killing me by this time. And gagged me again, duct tape over my mouth, and put me in the cupboard and tied the cupboard up because there was no lock, so to speak. So he tied the cupboard up so I couldn't open. And he said he was going to get some fuel or something, and he would be back. And he never came back. Oh, well, that's what I think anyway, because I escaped in that time. Sitting there, he cranked up the television. It was loud, so, you know, nobody could hear me, you know, yell, speak or whatever. He left, and I think I slept probably 10 minutes, 20 minutes nap, you know, sitting there because, you know, you can't do anything. Again, you know, when I did wake up, I was praying and, you know, whatever. And I was thinking of different stories because, you know, I remember a story we had heard at church. This lady, she had escaped the Taliban when the first invasion took place. And I was like, you know, sort of, I, in a weird way, sort of drew strength from that. And also, you know, there's another story in the Bible as well. There was, you know, Saint Peter. No, it wasn't. Sorry. It was Paul. Paul and Barnabas, they were two people. They were locked up in the prison and they were singing songs and, you know, miracle happened. The chains broke and they was free. And I was like, you know, try that. So it was, you know, whatever possible, I guess. And I don't know how long I was in the cupboard. I can't remember. I can't give you a time because I don't know. Average, I'm guessing probably 3-4 hours maybe. I remember, you know, Deal No Deal back in the day used to be a show. It used to come around 4 o'clock. That's what I remember. What really pushed me was nature called. I had to go to the loo. I'm thinking if I do get out, if Darren walks in, I'm dead meat. You know, you know, you can imagine what would happen. But then I'm also thinking, I have little bit of dignity left, and I don't want to pee in my pants. So, like, everything else I've gone through, I'm like, I've got a little bit of dignity left. I'm not going to pee in my pants. And I'm like, yeah. I'm, you know, all these things are going through my head. And somehow I managed to push the door with my leg and my feet and my knees, you know, different angles, trying to, you know, push it. And eventually the door gave way, and, you know, and I remember staring at the door and going, if he walks in, I'm dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the first thing I'd think of, I think.
Yeah. And then, and then there was the big question, do I first go to the toilet or should I run?
And tell us what was your what was the answer?
I ran first, but I regretted it because then, yeah, when I did go to the reception, freaked out. They didn't let me go to the toilet for another half hour, and then I was busting by this time. So, like, it didn't really help. But I remember ran to the door, went to the reception. Poor lady, she was filling in. She just went white, you know.
Gloria, I cannot imagine how anybody would feel being confronted by somebody in your position. It would be horrific. Oh, God. Yeah.
I walk in with my hands tied, you know, tape hanging on the side because I managed to put the take the tape out, pushing it with my tongue.
Yep.
So I managed to sort of, and moving my mouth and, you know, just managed to sort of get that off from one side. So, but it was still hanging from one side. So, you know, it was a very classy look to walk into. So, and she walks in and she's freaked out. And I was like, I've been kidnapped from Melbourne. I'm from Melbourne. I think I've been kidnapped. You know, I'm working at the drop-in center. I tried to give a really short version of the story. And I said, you know, I'm in room number one, da-da-da. And I sat in the corner and I'm freaking out because, you know, if Darren walks in, I'm dead. Oh, and they'll go lock the door. She calls her husband. Then they call the police. And this, you know, this town was tiny. So I think every police officer was there.
Oh, yeah.
And then obviously, yeah, then they, you know, took the pictures and stuff. And, yeah, I asked the lady, I was like, can I go to the toilet? And they're like, the police said, don't let her go anywhere. And I'm like, everyone goes to the toilet then.
Yeah. And you know, that's it's a bit of a conundrum as a policewoman when you are confronted with somebody that has been tortured and raped. What you try and do is preserve every piece of evidence you can. And of course, when somebody needs to go to the toilet, if you can hold them off from doing it, but like I've even saved the paper that somebody wipes themselves with because you would hate to lose
evidence.
that vital evidence. So I sort of understand the police, no, don't go to the toilet, but in the end, you know, nature takes its course, doesn't it? What can you do?
You got to go. especially after having two kids, forget it. You would know the female anatomy, so it just doesn't work.
You know, it's funny, but when you're locked in the room with him, the first thing I'm thinking of, it's just so me, but the first thing I'm thinking of to myself is, God, what happens if you need to go to the toilet? Did he, and I'm sure that would have happened, but did he go with you or did he allow you to go to the toilet on your own? I don't imagine he would.
He did, but he would stand, you know, he would stand at the door or just leave the door open or stuff like that.
Oh, right.
So he would, watching every move and paranoid.
Yeah.
He was paranoid about everything. He would, like, take the battery out of the phone just so they couldn't trace the phone and stuff like that.
And so the police come, you obviously get examined and they, you know, they do their work. But Darren was located, wasn't he?
Yeah, so they took me to Canberra, actually, for forensics because Young was too small of a place to get the forensics or they couldn't find anybody. So they were thinking, where would they take me? And on the way back, the officer who was driving me, he told me, like, they had found Darren. Apparently,
that would have been a big relief, wouldn't it?
Yes. So, he had crashed. He apparently crashed my car and about 2 hours away from Young. And they found him in Lithgow. So that was a relief. And they did the initial interview in Canberra. So the whole team came from Sydney. And, so they did the initial interview in Canberra and they charged him initially on that, evidence or what do you say? Statement, that's the word.
Yep. Can we go back a little bit? How did you find the whole police process? Did you feel that, like, did they explain what they were doing, why they were doing it? Like, were you kept in the loop, so to speak, or how amazing is Gloria? To think of everything that she's been through and she still manages to have the strength to like have a laugh and see goodness in people and the world in general. It would almost make me think about becoming a Christian if that's how forgiving somebody can see the world like Gloria can. Next week, we talk more about the, agony, anxiety and trauma that Gloria had to endure over 10 years of reliving her nightmare time and time again, due to both the judicial systems in New South Wales and Victoria being different, which I've got to say, I don't think it can be helped and I don't know how we fix it, but to put a victim through so much to prove a case, surely we don't need the victim to have to repeat her evidence almost word for word. But anyway, look, have a good week and we'll talk next week. Thanks. As you've probably noticed, we've moved to a new platform called Acast. I think that's the right expression, I've got no idea. And my previous reviews haven't transferred over. I need reviews. Could you do me a favour and put up a review? And thank you so much for your support and patronage. With your help, I can give you that little bit extra. Thanks.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.